Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Fenway Rundown, the premier podcast for all things Boston Red Sox.
I know people harp on the last place thing, but essentially what's important is the record.
If the Red Sox want people to start thinking the ownership cares, then maybe they should talk.
This is the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live. Here are your hosts, Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam.
Third and final Fenway Rundown of the week. I'm Chris Cotillo here, Sean McAdam as well.
When you say third,
right? Yeah, my first.
What was your attendance like for the first two?
I had a great excuse, doctor's note, the whole deal. I will note, Sean said, recovering. It was really just laying here after a minor calf surgery. Second one, both legs, best shape of my life now. We've gotten rave reviews off the first two podcasts of the week, Lou Marlone and Pedro Martinez, and people have said, like, these are the best pods you've ever done, which I take a little bit of offense to, but I also
can't argue.
So during that time, over the last few days, there has been a lot of Red Sox news. We're going to break it down here because we have not gotten a chance to do that together yet, at least in this format. But a lot of coverage on the site. Sean has had it covered on the podcast, and we've kept everybody up to date, up to the minute, on the Fenway Rundown Insider Text program.
Yes, indeed. And to join the vaunted Insider Text program, all one must do is text the word join to 617-751-6257, then click the link for a free, absolutely no obligation, 14-day trial period, followed by an entirely reasonable $4.99 charge per month.
So we will get to Brian Baio. Obviously, I think that's the story of the week for the Red Sox. That was made official yesterday, his extension, and the press conference will be tomorrow in the Dominican Republic. But let's backtrack all the way to Lucas Giolito, which broke earlier in the week. Devastating news. I know you talked about it with Lou Marlone the other day, but we'll kind of double up on that here, because when I saw this coming out of my pain med haze on Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever it was, the reaction was simple. Like, this is just about the worst guy on the team to get hurt. This puts them in the worst position possible, and then, which we'll get to, this does not help their chances of adding starting pitching or adding to this roster at all. It's just a crushing, crushing blow, one they couldn't afford in any way. The contract structure makes it even worse. This is a guy you're counting on for durability. It looks bad with Chris Sale dealing that you went for this guy. Who's not. I mean, there's just like 10 layers, and they're all horrible. Lucas Giolito told us on this pod a couple weeks ago, he didn't have goals about ERA or wins or performance or anything like that. His goal every year is to pitch 200 innings. He's basically come close to that, throughout his career without ever doing it. Got to 184 last year, felt good, had increased velocity everywhere this spring. Who knows if that had to play into it, but just like, understanding that he's going for the second opinion on Monday and that it's not 100% a surgery thing, and that it just probably is a surgery thing, truly could not be worse in any way for the Red Sox there.
Yeah, worst case scenario all around, as you said. And I might take issue with the guy they could least afford to lose on the entire roster. Maybe that goes to Rafi Devers. But certainly among the pitchers, he was the guy that they were counting on the most. As you noted, no matter what, you thought this guy was going to post every 5 days. He'd given 170 plus innings in four of his last five full seasons, not counting 2020, of course. So regardless of what their expectations were for the team or for him, all of a sudden they've got a chunk of innings they've got to replace. And now you have, you really do not have anybody in that rotation who is a proven, consistent major league starter. They certainly hope, and we'll get to this later in the podcast, that Brian Bello becomes that, but he is not yet. We've seen flashes from Nick Pivetta, Tanner Houck, Garrett Whitlock, but none of them have held up under the scrutiny and workload of a full 162-game season where they deliver 30 starts and are established major league starting pitchers. They may become those this year. We've certainly seen encouraging signs from some of them. I think that Andrew Bailey and the new pitching program will help some of those guys, but that's all about hoping and projection. If you're talking about, I know this guy can give us these many innings, he'll take the ball every 5 days, he'll have 30 or more starts, there isn't one of those guys on the staff now, and that speaks to what kind of loss Giolito represents.
Yeah, it does. I think it's just one of those that they couldn't afford. And the way we look at it, and we were both in agreement as soon as this happened the other day, you know, I think the knee-jerk reaction from some people out there was, well, now they really need Montgomery, or now they really need Snell, or they're really going to go out and get somebody. To me, you know, John Henry does not think this team's good enough to compete already. He's already sunk, you know, $18 million into a rotation spot. He's not going to sink, let's say, 20 more and be, you know, $40 million in on one rotation spot. That's not going to make that much of a difference for the whole team. I believe that's how he thinks. And so, you know, as you believe, as Chris Smith wrote, as I think, you know, this makes Jordan Montgomery less likely. You know, John Heyman seemed to write some of that today. And we've seen, you know, kind of the shine come off those rumors, even though I don't think we've been kind of biting on that the whole time. I do think that this opens them up for, you know, maybe a veteran on a short-term deal if Mike Clevenger or Michael Lorenzen's willing to sign for cheap. So far, that has not been the case. That hasn't happened, but it is also March 8th, so who knows. You know, but a lot of pressure now on Houck, on Whitlock, and then your first line of defense is Winkowski, Cooper Criswell, Brandon Walter. You know, all of a sudden, this already weak pitching staff is that much weaker.
Yeah, as regards Montgomery, I agree. I think it's sort of counterintuitive. People thought, oh, now they really have to sign him, when in actuality, the chances of him, I would have put the chances of Montgomery with the Red Sox on Monday morning at about 10%. Excuse me, that may have been generous. I would now put that at less than 5%. I think that John Henry now sees this as investing good money after bad, that whatever long shot hopes this team had of contending, of maybe hanging around and making things interesting through the late summer, are now dashed with the loss of Giolito. And he's not about to, you know, put out a 9-figure offer to Jordan Montgomery to, you know, to go from 72 wins to 77 wins. That's not part of the vision that he sees.
And I do think that, you know, it just says a lot about the staff. And my assumption is that Bello will be the opening day starter in 3 weeks in Seattle. But Cora, you know, saying yesterday that it's down to Bello and Pivetta. You know, if you just think about it from this lens, that in May, Pivetta was demoted to the bullpen and could not crack a staff that had, you know, Corey Kluber in it and some of these other guys that were there because he was struggling so bad. I understand he pitched well for a lot of the rest of the year and they liked the upside and all that. But now he's in the mix to be the opening day starter. It just kind of shows you, like, you know, how the goalposts have moved a lot, where he's the leader of the pitching staff. He is a candidate to be the opening day starter. You know, there is upside there. I've always thought that with him, but never consistency. And now you're looking at him as one of the guys, which, you know, they shouldn't be doing. He should be, you know, your number three, your number four in a serviceable rotation. The fact that he's your kind of 1A or 1B guy here, I think, is scary, just because we've seen, you know, the high highs, the low lows, and then behind him, it's an even bleaker picture. And, you know, Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock are talented pitchers, but they don't have that track record of starting. You know, Josh Winkowski, same thing last year. And I just think it's just, you know, you look at, I mean, the – just kind of how far they've fallen compared to, I think back to just starting to cover that team in 18, and I know that was a championship roster, and this isn't far from it, but your fifth starter was Eduardo Rodriguez, right? Or Eovaldi, guys that became your opening day starters later on. Like, that is just it's a far cry from that now.
You now have Brian Baio, who you hope can become a very good number two, and a bunch of guys who right now have to be classified as number fours. You know, that's where they sit in my mind. They have a guy where you can envision Baio growing into that role. Even if he's not a true number one, he can be a solid number two, and we'll get to his extension in a minute. But everybody else with more of a track record at the big league level, whether it's Crawford, Hauk, Whitlock, Pivetta, or Winkowski, right now you wouldn't classify any of them as better than a number four. That doesn't mean they can't be. It doesn't mean they can't improve or take steps forward. But if you're assessing what they have on hand right now, that's how you have to look at it.
Other injury news, we've seen kind of a lot of it this week. I do think it's the time during camp where you see some guys start getting sore. The work's starting to pile up here after being there for a month. Trevor Story was scratched from the lineup. Tyler O'Neill not going to the Dominican. Vaughn Grissom, shut down for a little bit. My read on this, and again, we're not there right now. Story, very minor. O'Neill, very minor. Some of these other things. Vaughn Grissom doesn't seem like he will be out for very long. So, there's kind of this narrative developing of, oh, they're pushing these guys too hard. They're all getting hurt. I think it's just normal, spring bumps and bruises. And Lou Maloney, who was on the pod the other day, tweeted something to that effect. If this was June, Trevor Story probably plays yesterday. It's just, it's not. It's March. And so if he's, got a twinge or anything, why play him? Why make it worse? There's no point to that at all.
Yeah, the only one of some concern is Grissom, of course, who they basically have already ruled out for opening day. But that kind of thing with some rest and treatment and time, and we've still got almost 3 weeks before opening day, then I think you can probably project him to be ready at or about the home opener, give him a couple of extra weeks or 10 days after the season starts. That's not going to derail him long term. But as we talked about, he's missing valuable time to get comfortable with Story. He's missing valuable time to take more reps at a position at which he's not very experienced. It's unfortunate, but it's not calamitous at this point with the projected timetable for his return.
Yeah, and the goal is always to get through spring training healthy. I think no matter how you slice it with the Giolito thing, that's not going to be the case, and it'll be a failure in that regard. But now the Red Sox have to hold on for 3 more weeks and hope that nobody else goes away at Giolito. And again, we talk about that in kind of final terms. He will be getting a final or second opinion in Birmingham with the Dr. James Andrews Institute. I think Dr. Andrews retired, so it's one of the other guys there. But
Right.
on Monday, and then probably chart the course. And I think, barring a miracle, it looks like surgery is the likely option for him. Other big story of the week, perhaps the bigger one, as Sean and I have both teased in the last few minutes, is the Brian Baio extension. Mass Live readers and Insider Text subscribers knew this was coming first. That's not a humble brag. That's a straight brag from 2 weeks ago when Brian Baio told me in the clubhouse that, we're working on an extension, and yeah, I think it's probably going to be done by spring training. And that was not a normal answer you get when you ask that question, because it's rare for these things to get done, and it's rare for a player to admit it, but good on him for doing it. I mean, we pulled while we were down there for the first time, and Sean and Chris Smith will be going back down early next week to Fort Myers as I stay here a little laid up. We talked to a lot of players in Fort Myers about, potential extensions. Are you close? Has progress been made? And Brian Baio was the only one to say, yep, we're moving here. We're about to get it done. And, that was one of those moments where I'm in the clubhouse with everybody, got him alone, and went up and wrote the story immediately, and no need to waste any time. And since then, I've just kind of figured it's a matter of time until they get it done. The details are out there. 6 years for $55 million. They lock in that one free agent year. And they put an option on a second. So really, you're extending your control over him for 2 years through his age 31 season. You know, Sean, I know you wrote this for your weekly notebook and you have your thoughts on it. But to me, these deals are hard to lose if you're the team, and they're hard to win if you're the player. You can't fault a guy for guaranteeing 55 with the option to get to 75 million, life-changing money, all that. But from the Red Sox perspective, if, you know, 7 years from here, from now, it's going to be hard to look at that and say, oh, this turned out to be a horrible deal. It's either a great deal where they're getting a bargain at $9 million a year on the CBT for a good pitcher, or it's, you know, well, just get through this one more year of $9 million for Bayo. He's been a bust or he's not on the roster, but it's not going to kill you.
Yeah, it's not that kind of investment. I spoke to some people around the game yesterday, one of whom said that, you know, $55 million is not something to sneeze at, but it's not $155 million. It's not $200 million. It's not some gargantuan free agent commitment that is really going to restrict what they can do going forward. As I wrote today, it's essentially what they're on the hook for here is an average of $9 million over the next 6 years. If Brian Bayo is only a league average starting pitcher, a guy that goes out and gives you more than 25 starts, let's say an ERA of just over four, then that's probably a pretty good return on your investment. It's not what they project or hope for Brian Bayo. They see a ceiling that's higher where he's going to step forward starting this year and really be that first homegrown, really quality starting pitcher they've developed going back to Clay Buchholz, maybe even to John Lester. That's the hope. But even in a middling achievement for him, as I said, that kind of profile, 27 starts, 4.2 ERA, which I think he could do right now without getting any better at all, then it's not a bad investment here. They're not sticking their neck out. And as I wrote, this isn't the Kansas City Royals, although some people would argue that the Royals are being more aggressive than the Red Sox this winter. Fair point. But it's not something that is going to box them in from doing other things going forward. If it goes off the rails, I don't think it'll go off the rails, but in a worst case scenario, they can survive it. In a, you know, in a, well, he was okay. He didn't develop into who we thought he was going to be or hoped he was going to be. They can live with that. And the hope is, as I said, that he develops into at least a number two guy who can give you 180 innings and, you know, be, if not an ace, then a near top of the rotation guy.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at, you know, the Garrett Whitlock deal is the other one they've gotten down done in this bucket. Like, that's a lot less money. It's, you know, $19 million over 4 years plus a couple of options. Another example of a deal where, you know, Whitlock has not pitched particularly well the last couple of years. If this
or
continues,
stayed healthy.
Right. If this continues, okay. You know, like, that's, it's really like, so such small money in the grand scheme of things, big money to real people like us, but not to them. And that, I just think, you know, it's, again, just hard for the team to view it as a loss. You know, I think one of your first reactions was kind of risky to do it for a pitcher. And you wrote kind of to that effect in your notebook. I think the Red Sox probably wanted to be more aggressive on the pitching part of things just because they don't have that coming. And they have not been able to do that for a while. So, you know, I think Casas is probably priority number one entering the winter, but Bayo pretty close to it. Casas seems to have no progress being made at this point. You know, Bayo obviously gets done. I have some thoughts on where they go next as they continue to try to do this. It seems like they're still active on this front. You know, Rob Bradford said they've talked to Tanner Houck. To me, you know, it's going to be tough to find middle ground there because Houck does not really have the recent track record to get paid well, probably where he'd even want to do this deal. He's an older guy comparatively. You know, I think despite you not thinking so, Cutter Crawford, I think, is a candidate for this. I think they could try to do that just because I think the organization thinks highly of him. And on the positional side, you know, Casas the obvious guy, but Willy Abreu, I think, is somebody they're high on and could look to try to get a deal done with. Maybe, yeah,
I mean, there are
down
a couple of position players who could be candidates here. Vaughn Grissom, despite the injury, obviously a minor thing that isn't going to sideline him for long. Sedan Rafaela would be another option. But those are all hard to, you know, you're doing more projection there because at least with Bayo, as I wrote today, this is a guy who's been in the system for more than 8 years. I mean, we forget that with an international free agent, you get him at 16 or 17. He's 24 now, about to turn 25 in May. They have a real sense of who this guy is as a person.
Right.
What's going to motivate him? Is he going to be okay? If there isn't that carrot in front of him to try to qualify for a higher salary the next year through arbitration. But with Rafaela, you're talking about, what, you know, 60 major league at bats, same thing for Abreu, maybe a little bit more. Grissom, very small sample size. It's harder to know what those guys are going to deliver. You're really trying to project, you know, what the ceiling is, what risk you're comfortable with. And for a guy like Hauk, as you noted, he's 27. And if he signs, let's say, a 5 or 6 year deal that buys out a year or two of free agency, that kind of puts him into that no man's land of going back on the market at 32 or so, 32, 33. Mm-hmm. That's not ancient, but it's no longer in that prime free agent window. And you wonder, does he want to sell out a couple of years of free agency for the security now? Or does he bet on himself a little bit that he turns a corner, has another good 3 years or so, and then gets to free agency at 30 or 31 in better position to market himself for that real life-changing contract money?
Yeah, and again, I think just talking to all these guys, as the Red Sox seem to be at least flirting a little bit with some of them, like it falls under the it can't hurt to try, because it can't hurt to get these deals done. Those are deals that, again, hard to hurt you long term. Bayo's deal, I think there's a little bit of confusion over this, where he's getting paid $1 million this year. Against the CBT, it counts for $9 million. We've talked a lot about the show, a lot on this show about the budget, and that's been very, very clear. We both know and have reported there is a hard budget. There are, as Sam Kennedy said, set parameters. John Henry has not moved off that budget yet. And I think, you know, we both thought it would be around 200 to 205 million, somewhere in that range. Now, if you look at the CBT, they're at 215. So, oh, okay, were we wrong? No. Here's what happened. The CBT went up on the last two moves they made. Bayo at 9 million, Hendricks at 5 million. But the real cash being spent on both of those guys equates to just $2 million for Hendricks and $1 million for Bayo. And so I think maybe this was kind of a mistake on my part throughout the offseason, calculating the John Henry budget and the John Henry tax, as I've called it, in terms of CBT dollars, which is kind of monopoly money in a way under the baseball rules, and not in terms of real money. To see, you know, what he's actually spending on the payroll this year. People have asked, do any of these moves signify, you know, more aggressiveness either way? You know, they're only $22 million theoretically away from the CBT threshold now. If that would rule them out on Jordan Montgomery, if nothing else has in your head, then maybe that's what does it. Not you, I mean the people, the good people who listen and subscribe to our Fenway Rundown Insider Text program. But I think, you know, this is not Henry moving the budget by adding $9 million to the CBT, because that's a cost for down the line. He's really, you know, only giving Brian Bayo a raise of $300,000 or something this year to get to $1 million.
Yeah, the CBT figure is an accounting trick. Yeah. And I don't mean that they're trying to hide money or get away with anything, but there's a difference between how it's calculated for the CBT, for both MLB and the MLB Players Association. And there's, as they use the phrase used in football, is cash spending, right? That's the money that's actually going out the door in 24 to this roster. And when you look at it that way, the addition of both these guys, Hendricks and the extension for Bayo, is a minimal jump up. As you noted, Bayo probably would have made $800,000 or close to it. So you know, he's getting 200,000 more than they might have budgeted for. And the Hendricks thing, you knew going in, you weren't getting anything or getting much from him until later in the year, if at all. And it's part of a bigger picture 2-year investment where you hope he becomes your closer in 25. If you don't retain Jansen, we don't expect him to. We don't expect Jansen to be here on August 1st. So it's really financial sleight of hand here.
Yeah. And again, I don't think it changes anything meaningfully in terms of roster additions, where they are, any of that stuff. Again, I could see a scenario where, you know, they go out and try to get a Lorenzen or a Clevinger at this point just because they need those innings. But against the budget, it would kind of be hard to see that happening unless they moved other pieces of the roster. And, you know, the domino effect of the Giolito thing, to circle back to this before we wrap, is kind of makes it harder if you are still trying and name only to contend here. Like, if you trade Jansen or you trade Martin, that was probably more palatable when you had Schreiber on the roster and when you had Houck and Whitlock, who are going to be probably, you know, at least one of them in the bullpen along with Winkowski. Now it's like no Schreiber, Houck and Whitlock in the rotation. Your bullpen is a bunch of kind of unproven guys as well ahead of Jansen. You know, maybe you go all in on that and have a lot of even more unproven guys there, but maybe it makes it harder to do. So I think, you know, yeah, as I said, the ripple effects of that continue.
Yeah, on the one hand, they're going to have a lot of flexibility with those sixth and seventh inning guys, which Alex Cora preached about last September, saying they need hard-throwing guys who they can move up and down. Well, they're going to have that with guys like Isaiah Campbell, maybe Weissert, some others that are in the mix there who aren't quite as proven. Zach Kelly is another. But they're not going to have the guys who can get more than three outs at a time, as both Houck and Whitlock have demonstrated, or even Winkowski. He had a lot of appearances last year that were more than an inning. So there's a domino effect here to losing Giolito, in that you are robbing from your depth in the bullpen to all of a sudden cover some spots in the rotation that you didn't anticipate being open.
That's the Fenway Rundown for Friday. Sean will be heading back down to Fort Myers over the weekend. Chris Smith will follow. I'll be manning the fort from our, not Fort Myers, this fort from Massachusetts studios. But we will have three shows for you next week. Hope to mix in a player guest or two. That's called a tease. We will let you know on Twitter. But first, we will tease the guests and tell everybody who it is on our Insider Text program. That's something we actually do. How do they sign up?
They do so by texting the word join to the following number, 617-751-6257, then clicking on the link to subscribe. It's a 14-day trial period. After that, it's $4.99 a month. It gives you an opportunity to get the news first. It gives you an opportunity to send questions to myself, to Chris Smith, to keep up on everything, to provide questions for our mailbag episodes. It is a one-stop shopping for fans who want to keep up and be invested in all things Red Sox.
This has been the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live.